Fortune 500 by Bronwyn Malden, read by the author. This is the seventh story in the Streetwise Cycle. To read more, visit streetwisecycle.com. Mark turned to see who'd sat down beside him on the bench, readying a professional smile, just in case. Great. A stinky homeless man in a greasy coat too heavy for the weather. Mark inched away from the old man. He very much needed to not smell like street people right now. Pops sneered. You sit on a bench in a public park, anybody might sit down next to you. My ass has as much a right as yours to be on this bench. He stretched his legs and pushed back his shoulders, sidling closer to the suit. Pops chuckled to himself. Mark frowned and crossed his legs, leaning farther away. He flicked an invisible bit of fluff from his knee. The sunlight suddenly caught the nap of his suit. Shit. They'd know it was off the rack and make their decision right then. He'd seen people turned down for less. Last year's lapel width or the wrong MBA. The sour look on the suit's face gave Pops a sharp pain in his gut. This was why he didn't like to come downtown. 9 to 5, these people thought they owned the place. Every evening, they cleared out and left it to the dealers and whores. At least they'd talk to Pops. They knew Pops' money was as green as anybody else's. Mark looked at his watch. 15 more minutes before he could walk the 4 blocks, take the elevator to the 33rd floor, and arrive at a time that said punctual but not desperate. Not nearly as desperate as he felt. He flipped open his manila folder to review the job description again. Pops looked at the papers over the suit's shoulder. Job interview, Pops said. Mark said, yes, making his voice as crisp and unfriendly as he could. The ice in the man's voice sounded like a challenge to Pops. What job? Mark stiffened. Now the stinky bum wanted to talk to him. He'd show him. Business Valuation Associate, he announced crisply. Pops looked at the patch of white in the man's hair, the lines on his face. Aren't you kind of old for entry level? Mark looked at the homeless man full on. He knew financial advisory services? Pops didn't like being scrutinized so closely. He pulled his arms and legs in close across his body. Mark could see the coat was Burberry. The style was 15 years old at least, and filthy, but it was the real deal. He had to take the chance. Who do you know at Deloitte? Mark asked. Edward Monahan, Susan Brownlow, Ara Carpetian. It was all Mark could do not to let his jaw drop. Those were Deloitte's top West Coast people. Pop smiled. George Miller. I supervised him early on. He had the man's attention now. This was fun. Miller the killer? Mark asked. Pops leaned back against the bench again. He turned up his face to catch the warm rays of the sun. Businessmen who spent their days in climate-controlled buildings lost the ability to enjoy this. He'd lost it once and never would again. Miller the killer, he said. Miller the killer, Miller the killer. He realized he was muttering and clamped his mouth shut. Was the wino crazy or the real deal? Of course there were people on the streets who'd fallen from grace. Drinking, drugs, they could take you down. Untreated mental illness. Others, they just couldn't take the stress. A layoff during a bad patch in the economy, and you could find yourself missing mortgage payments on a multi-million-dollar home. Lose your wife and kids when you couldn't provide for them. Thinking of his family made Mark's chest tighten. He had to land a job soon. If things didn't turn around quickly, he could just as well find himself on the other end of this park bench. Mark asked, "Do you think any of those guys would remember you?" Pops laughed. Mark started to panic. This guy had information he needed. "Who are you?" he asked urgently. Pop stopped laughing abruptly. He had the suit now. He looked back and forth around the park. Then he leaned forward and spoke softly, forcing the suit to lean in closer. The stench from the man's mouth was fetid. Mark had to repress his gag reflex. Pop said, "You remember reading about the Deloitte executive a few years ago who took his wife Helen and his son sailing and never returned?" Mark racked his brain but couldn't find a specific memory. Still, those sorts of stories were in the news all the time. Pop said, "When the sailboat finally turned up floating off the shore of Chile, the wife and son's throats had been cut, and the executive was nowhere to be found." Mark thought, "This stuff is gold. Who should he ask for first? Monahan, Brownlow, or Carpetian? This guy could get him in front of a major exec during the first interview. Or Miller. The old guy had known him personally, but Miller wasn't as high up." Mark needed a name. "Who are you?" he repeated. Pop said, "They eventually found him in Mexico, leading a major drug cartel." "What?" Pop stood up suddenly, arms flying out from his sides. "He wouldn't be taken alive, not the man from Deloitte." Pops crouched in front of the bench, imaginary machine gun in his arms. "His men battled the Federales down to the last bullet. Bang, bang, rat-a-tat-tat." Mark snapped his manila folder closed. "They were closing in from all sides, but the man from Deloitte escaped through the underground tunnels. A plastic surgeon gave him a new lease on life. He was never seen again." Mark stood abruptly. What a fool he'd been. "No one can catch the man from Deloitte," Pops shouted at the suits retreating back. Mark looked at his watch and began to hurry, soles of his shoes clipping across the pavement. He ground his teeth in frustration. He was going to be late for the interview. Shelter by Bronwyn Malden. Read by the author. This is the 8th story in the Streetwise Cycle. To read more, visit streetwisecycle.com. "Sister Delia, you look lovely." Brother Raoul shook Delia's hand vigorously. His wife, Marguerite, slapped his arm playfully. Delia stretched the grin on her face wider, lips trembling with the effort. Raoul actually preferred a woman with a little more meat on her, but he could see in Delia's smile she enjoyed hearing how well her diet showed. "Leave our sister alone in the house of the Lord," Marguerite chided, as always. She didn't mind Raoul's silly game on Sundays. The rest of the week, he was meek as a rabbit. Raoul said, "This is only the Lord's front porch." The women laughed as if they'd never heard him say that before. "Pastor," Delia called out as he passed, "can I speak to you?" Pastor Tony clutched his keys a little tighter. "Sister Delia," he said. She asked, "Are we hosting the mobile shelter next week?" Tony sighed. Several area churches took turns hosting 30 homeless men and women to sleep overnight for a week. When he'd first proposed participating, Sister Delia had been one of the most outspoken opponents. He said, "Don't worry, we'll keep the sanctuary locked up tight." "Actually," Delia said, then took a deep breath. Other church members may have been swayed by their natural deference to a man of God, others by Pastor Tony's good looks. A few may have even believed the church had some responsibility to use its limited resources to minister to people who'd proven they could not be trusted. Delia had fallen prey to none of those arguments, but she'd been in the minority. Delia swallowed hard. Things were different now. I want to volunteer as a host parishioner, she said. On shelter nights, Pastor Tony and four other church volunteers slept alongside their homeless guests. Tony said, Why, Sister Delia! He beamed with the pride of knowing he had finally softened the heart of one of God's most recalcitrant sheep. Delia pulled into the parking lot the next Sunday evening, as she had hundreds of times before. In 20 years of attending services at Victory Life Church, she'd never slept there. Never even dozed off during a sermon. Well, not often. Separate groups of men and women had gathered on the sidewalk, trying to appear as if they weren't watching the church door intently. Delia stepped out of her car. She took her sleeping bag and one small case from the back seat. Everything else was packed away safely out of sight in the trunk. Once inside, her church looked like it did when preparing for any event. Women chattered in the kitchen over chopping boards and boiling pots, while men set up the multipurpose room. Instead of lining up chairs, though, they were setting up cots. Pastor Tony showed Delia the layout. We've put up the divider, he said. You'll have a cot by the door on the women's side. He smiled. Can you help serve soup? Over dinner, the hosts dispersed themselves among the tables, making small talk. Delia sat with a quiet young man in jeans and an electric blue T-shirt. His thick black hair hung down in his eyes. He gave short answers to her questions in a soft voice. Miguel, 22, York Boulevard. After dinner, Delia helped with dishes, then wiped down the counters. When Sister Linda offered to do the mopping, Delia took the mop from her and said, You go on home. I'm here for the night. Linda bristled, thinking, You can sleep over because you don't have a husband to go home to, so don't be so stuck up. But she didn't say anything. She put on her coat and left. Delia changed into her gray sweatsuit in the ladies' room. No showers, but the cot would be a luxury. Brushing her teeth, she watched the homeless women in the mirror. They moved around each other in the narrow space with exaggerated care, avoiding physical contact. She caught the eye of an older woman with a lean face and ashen skin, who looked away quickly. Delia felt the other woman's shame in the pit of her own stomach. Delia leaned over and spat chalky toothpaste foam into the sink. When everyone had settled into their cots and the lights were off, Delia slipped into her sleeping bag. She stretched her legs their full length, impossible to do in the car's back seat. The sounds of strangers breathing, the squeak of metal and canvas as they shifted in their cots, though alien, comforted Delia. No policeman would tap on her window in the middle of the night and say, You can't sleep here. No strung-out hoodlum in the throes of a psychotic episode would pound the trunk, screaming to be let in. There would be eggs and coffee in the morning. She would arrive at work with a full stomach. Delia closed her eyes to make a prayer of thanksgiving to God for 1 week of comfort in a life so far removed from the one she had lived her previous 53 years. But when she did, she was haunted by horrific memories of packing in a rush so she could be gone before the sheriff's deputy arrived. The hardest had been her baby Jesus collection. She couldn't take them all. She'd had to choose favorites. How would God punish her for the ones she'd left behind? Baby Jesus in his manger, sweet baby Jesus in Mary's arms. Porcelain, plastic, ceramic, glass, all were equal in the eyes of the Lord, but not in Delia's. She'd selected 5, then 3. Then, eyes swollen almost shut from weeping, she'd found room in her suitcase for 2. A man on the other side of the partition coughed softly, startling Delia back to the present. It had all begun with a homeless man. If she'd known how missing that first mortgage payment would lead to where she was now, She would have given the grimy man every last dime. Her life still would have come to this. Transit by Bronwyn Malden, read by the author. This is the ninth and final story in the Streetwise Cycle. To read more, visit streetwisecycle.com. Pops pushed his wobbly shopping cart to the corner of Alice Street and San Fernando Road. He leaned into the garbage can and sorted through fast food wrappers and weekly papers to get to the recyclables, plastic, aluminum, and glass. It was usually worth the effort to dig deep into the stink. Glass sank to the bottom. The old man wiped his hands down the front of his trench coat. He could tell from the looks people gave him he reeked worse than the garbage can. But there wasn't a damn thing he could do about it. To hell with anybody who cared. Farther down the street was a bus stop bench where he could take a breather. Pops pushed his cart down the wheelchair ramp and into the street. It picked up speed as he crossed the road, rushing forward until it crashed into the cement bench.
"Watch where you're going, old man."
Pops looked up, surprised to see the kid standing there. The kid hesitated, just as stunned.
"Pops, what are you doing all the way down here?"
The kid stood with hands stuffed into a puffy black coat, headphone wires dangling from his ears. A black baseball cap sat askew on his head. His jeans were clean, and there was chub in his cheeks. The kid was doing good.
"You holding?" Pops asked.
The kid turned down the volume on his iPod.
"You can't handle what I'm holding, Pops."
Pops took a pack of Camels from his own coat pocket. He shook out the last cigarette and lit up. He looked the kid up and down.
"Give me that hat," Pops said.
The kid shook his head. Winos were so pathetic.
"You got it made in the shade," Pops said.
The kid gestured to Pops' shopping cart.
"You're not doing so bad."
Pops looked down. It wasn't enough. Not yet. Not for what he'd need to get through the night. Competition was tough these days. He'd gotten a late start, and from the contents of the garbage cans he'd hit so far, he could tell that damn Korean family had gotten up early. The kid peered into the cart. It wasn't enough for what Pops would need. The kid felt a pang in his stomach. He looked down the street for the bus, then kicked at a pebble. He asked,
"You still staying at that place off the Harvard exit?"
"Shh," Pops said, spraying saliva. He looked around to see if anyone was listening. He didn't like for people to know where he stayed. It was hard to find a place where a man could sleep in the open and the cops wouldn't hassle him. But at the bus stop, they were surrounded by people who lived regular lives. None of them would want to share a dusty vacant lot off the freeway.
"Yeah, I'm still there," Pops said.
In the long silence that followed, the kid looked for the bus again, then looked at his watch. Pops finished his cigarette and threw it in the gutter. The kid said, "Can I get a smoke?" Pops crushed the empty pack in his fist and tossed it into the gutter, too. When he did, the kid caught sight of something green. He leaned over and picked up the empty pack. He plucked a $20 bill from inside the plastic wrapper. He felt his face go hot.
"What the hell, old man? Throwing away cash money?"
Pop snatched the 20 out of the kid's hand.
"Cash money," he muttered.
"Cash money.
You could at least buy yourself a pair of shoes."
Pops looked down, startled to see a pair of blue plaid bedroom slippers on his feet. The kid shook his head and said,
"Dude, you need to get yourself into a program." I don't need no goddamn program, Pops said loudly.
The kid was surprised. It was like a light had clicked on inside the old man. Maybe he wasn't as far gone as he looked.
I know a guy downtown. They'll get you dried out, set you up in a little apartment.
Apartment!
Pops shouted and flung his arms out wide. You trying to kill me?
The kid spoke softly to try to quiet the old man down.
Chill out, he said. It's okay.
He caught a sidelong smirk from a high school girl leaning against a wall waiting for the bus. The kid shrugged an apology. She looked at her cell phone and snapped her chewing gum. Pops thought a blood vessel in his head might burst.
It's like you don't remember anything.
Don't go there, the kid warned. He wouldn't let Pops screw everything up for him this time. But Pops couldn't stop now.
I carried you in my arms.
Shut up, the kid yelled. He'd had enough of it.
Shut the fuck up, old man.
Pops shouted back.
I raised you better than to talk to your father like that.
The kid went stiff. Suddenly, Pops didn't have enough air in his lungs. He reached into his cart, grasping at bottles wildly. There had to be something left in one of them. Isaiah felt his father's shame wash over him.
It's okay, Dad, he said.
He grabbed a fistful of bills from his pocket and held them out. Pops waved him away.
I don't need your charity.
There were depths to which even an old wino like him wouldn't go.
Take it, Isaiah said.
He shoved the money into the pocket of Pop's trench coat. The bus pulled up.
I gotta go, Pops, the kid said.
Pop stared into his cart. Isaiah took one step onto the bus, then turned to look at his father. When will I see you again? But the light in his father's eyes had gone out. Pop's lips moved silently as he grabbed the handle of his shopping cart and began pushing it up San Fernando Road. The kid cranked up the volume and walked to the back of the bus. That was part 3 of The Streetwise Cycle by Bronwyn Malden. The Streetwise Cycle is a collection of 9 interconnected short stories. You can listen to the rest of the podcast, read the stories, or share your thoughts with the author online at streetwisecycle.com.